Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hao. Thank you for tuning in and supporting the show. Today's guest is a visitor from Hanoi. He originally hails from the UK and has been all over Asia, working in the likes of Tokyo, Shanghai, Singapore, and Bangkok, and is now in Hanoi as the Chief Retail Banking Group Officer for Techcom Bank. Thank you so much for making your time available, Darren.
Hey, Aaron. Good morning. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you. Darren, you have a wealth of experience, no pun intended.
Yeah.
When I look at the notes about what we're going to speak about today, I have a lot of questions about the insights and case studies about what you and your team can bring to Vietnam, because here it's relatively new, but it's fast emerging, and a lot of young people and older people are willing to adopt new technologies. So Techcom Bank being one of the largest banks in Vietnam, a lot of room to play, a lot of room to introduce new technologies, new behaviors, new practices. Let's deep dive into that. So just how about a quick elevator pitch intro about you, Darren, and then we can get started.
Yeah, sure. As I said, it's great to be here. I've been in banking for, I should whisper this quietly, 35 years.
Okay.
I've spent most of that time in larger developed markets, so London, New York, Tokyo. And I've also spent significant time in Shanghai, in Singapore, 6 years also in Bangkok, in Thailand, and also spent time across Africa and the Middle East.
Wow. So. Okay, that's a lot of time. You look very young, though.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. We're going to start with some rapid-fire questions, too, so the audience can get to know you a little bit better, and then we'll get into the podcast today. There's no right or wrong answer, so and keep your answers a bit shorter. This is for the one-minute videos that the internet loves these days, so let's get started. So first question for you, Darren. What brought you to Vietnam?
Well, first of all, you know, I've spent 10 years in Southeast Asia already. Mm-hmm. I used to work for a bank where I ran their business in Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, and Myanmar. I also spent significant time in Singapore. So I had a kind of interesting background across Southeast Asia. I love this part of the world. And when I was heading a bank in Thailand and also in China, what I saw was many of my institutional clients redirecting investment out of those markets into Vietnam.
Okay.
And so in dialogue with these corporate clients, you kind of got to understand why they were thinking about Vietnam, why sending more investment into Vietnam as opposed to their more traditional markets for different reasons, Thailand and China. And so that was interesting. The opportunity to come back to Vietnam, which at this stage, this part of the world, Southeast Asia, as I said, is really of interest. So it's a great opportunity, and it's exactly the right time to be here. You mentioned in your intro about digitalization and so on. I mean, if you think back sort of 2010, 2012, now 10 years on and post-COVID, Vietnam is digitizing incredibly fast, and that opens up new opportunities to be able to serve retail customers at scale in this market. And we're kind of there at that point where this change is happening.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it exciting to be here in Vietnam.
So the right question is, why not Vietnam?
Why not indeed? Why not? It's time.
I understand that's a motto at Techcom Bank that you've introduced as well. So we'll talk about that in a little bit later. Next question. What excites you about Vietnam?
Well, again, I think it's a market right now that is getting a lot of attention. It is a market that is growing at one of the fastest paces of markets around the world. The inward investment is significant, but also how Vietnam is starting to be recognized around the world. Let's not forget, this week we saw VinFast with its IPO in the U.S. Generate a huge amount of interest, becoming the third most valuable auto manufacturer.
Right. Cool.
The opportunities right now and what is happening in Vietnam is exciting. At the same time, if you think about the demographics, it is a sweet spot. Many countries have got more aging populations, but Vietnam has really got a population that is really at the right spot for growth.
Okay. If you had to explain to a stranger what you do at Techcom Bank, how would you do it?
I try to work with a great team of people to meet customer needs so that they can go spend their time on non-financial matters. They can go and spend time on things that are important to them. We'll take care of the banking aspect. So everyday payments, no problem. If you've got the one-off episodics, you want to buy a house, you want to invest in fixed income, or you want to think about protection for your family, we can handle that for you. But hopefully we can do it in a way that it's quick, it's seamless, it's intuitive, and you don't have to worry.
What's a myth about banking that you'd like to debunk today?
You know, I was speaking to someone earlier this week, and they said that there's a little bit of history in Vietnam that people kind of say, hold on, I put my money with the bank, and then every time I want to get money out of the bank charges me a little bit here and a little bit there, and that's not really fair. Mm. Techcombank, a few years ago, we were the first out there with fee-free for everyday banking. Mm. And we've just doubled down on that to make sure it truly is fee-free banking. For anyone who's got a current account with us.
Okay.
Most simply, you know, a bank at the end of the day is a place where it should be incredibly safe for you to store your money. Put your money here, access it whenever you want, and we'll take care of it in a very safe way. So I think Techcombank, certainly, we're not here to try and take a little bit of money here and there. We want to create value for our clients, and hopefully the value that we create is meaningful for the clients we serve.
So the question there is, why aren't they taking my money? They're not. So you guys are not definitely very good. Okay, next question for you, Darren. What makes Techcombank different from other banks?
Everybody says they're client-centric, right? You can't run any type of business unless you're client-centric. But yeah, this is our 30th anniversary. Mm. And this year, in 30 years, I think as I look at Techcombank, and I really see right at the core of our core values, client centricity is more than just, hey, it's a nice thing to talk about, and then let's go sell products. It's the way we want to run our business. So we have an extensive business segments team that is constantly doing customer research, really trying to deep dive into what do customers need. And it's not big groups of customers. What do 12 million retail customers need? No. We break it down into segments and into individual personas. And then we deep dive into what each of these different personas really needs and what are their current pain points and what are their journeys, their everyday journeys, so they can access what they need, when they want it, how they want it, wherever they want it. And that's what we want to provide. We want to deliver the very best solutions and offerings that we can in this marketplace, but in a way that it really is tailored specifically to different types of individuals. And we're investing a significant amount of money into technology to enable that. You know, you go back 50 years, banking was where you'd walk into a branch, you'd get to know the branch manager, they would know you, and there was a personal relationship that would develop over time. That was banking. You can't do that at scale. And that's where data, digital technology enables that hyper-personalization at scale. And so, you know, we're working with AWS in Singapore and putting a lot of our infrastructure and technology into the cloud. We've just deployed the Salesforce CRM for our frontline staff, which is leading technology around the world. We're the only bank in Vietnam to deploy Adobe Analytics as our marketing tech stack. We've built a data warehouse that enables us now to get some really smart people to do lots of modeling and create these models that enable us to identify what each of our customers are wanting. And through the other technology that we've deployed and are deploying, we're now able to nudge customers, hopefully with something that is meaningful, relevant, when they want it, how they want it, in their channel of choice. That's the difference of Techcombank.
Talking about innovation, what's one innovation at Techcombank that you're particularly proud of?
Well, innovation is kind of a broad subject. I'm actually proud of many of the different things. I'm actually proud of the way the team rolled out a new Techcombank mobile banking application last year. It's a very fresh. It looks very different. The interfaces are incredibly intuitive. Mm. You know, people talk about their mobile phones. You take an Apple iPhone and you kind of like that white box, and you open it up, and it's got a little smell that you're familiar with. You take it out, you turn it on. No one looks for the manual. You turn it on, it works, and you kind of know how to use it. Mm. Well, that's our mobile banking app. You turn it on, and you don't have to ask, oh, how do I do this, how do I do that? You just explore a little, and you can find everything that you possibly need, information you need, services you need, access to solutions that you need. And it's been done in a way that the UI, UX is really very seamless and intuitive for our customers. But there are so many examples of innovation that are happening every single day at Techcombank, big and small. As I said, we're 30th anniversary this year, but we're like a startup fintech. Mm. Never short of new ideas, and really those ideas are founded on the basis of understanding our customers.
Very good. Last question before we get into the podcast today. On a Sunday at 10 a.m., where would you be and what would you be doing?
Usually I've just finished a good workout and usually go for a run, grab a coffee, and then be trying to cool down with a cold shower.
Okay, very good. Let's dive into today's podcast, Darren. I think, as I mentioned earlier, you have a wealth of kind of insights and case studies from all around Asia. And here in Vietnam, people still use a lot of cash. When we think of competition from a traditional industry point of view, you think of potentially other banks, other mobile apps, and that's true. You need to innovate on those and be the market leader. But actually, the number one competition is kind of the cash, right? Because that is the barrier to technology adoption, to cards and QR codes and whatever else is out there in terms of forms of payment. So I want to keep that in mind and for our audience to keep in mind, because if you have questions and things that you want to know about this, you keep listening to the podcast, but also drop your questions in the comment. Darren, we talked about your mindset, why not? I want to dive into that a little bit more. Why do you have this mindset here in Vietnam in particular, and how has it influenced the choices you made in your career and to where you are now?
Yeah, I think I've had a somewhat unusual career. If you think about the countries that I've worked in, across banks, I think I've done pretty much most things. I've worked in institutional banking, retail banking. I've run large markets business. I've done operations. I've done collections. Been in finance, all sorts of different things. What I've done through the years is always look to see where can I make a difference, and where I think there is a role that, one, I would enjoy. Two, I think I could do it well. Three, I think I can make a positive difference. Those are the roles that I've taken. I haven't necessarily said, no, you know, my career path has to go this way. My career path has to go like this. Mm-hmm. It's where do I find things interesting? And so as a result, it's taken me from everywhere. It's taken me from Kenya in Africa through to Tokyo. It's taken me from Islamabad in Pakistan to Bangkok and to Myanmar and all sorts of other places. That journey itself has been kind of interesting for me. And that's where this why not sort of mentality comes. You know, why not? Let's try that. Mm. And when you think you get to a point where you're saying, you know what, it's okay. This is now running pretty well. It's time for somebody else to take it on and see what they can do. That's when you say, okay, enough is enough. Time to move on to something else. And just look at it this way. If you think you spend about one third of your life sleeping, imagine that, 30% of your life asleep. You spend another 30% of your life where you're kind of too young or too old to be fully able to enjoy life. So that middle 30 to 40% of your life is when you can be really active and engaged. And you spend that majority of that is really working. Mm-hmm. So you need to enjoy what you do. Mm-hmm. And you need to feel that you're doing something positive and making a difference. So why not?
Yeah. Having a purpose and knowing what your impact can be, that's really important. I'm going to switch gears a little bit to your role, Chief Head of Retail Banking
Chief
in Vietnam.
Retail Banking Group Officer.
There you go.
It's a mouthful.
Yes. it's one of the biggest, I'm sure, in terms of the offerings at Techcombank as well, reaches millions of customers. I'd like for you to kind of touch base about how you think about innovation for the offerings in relation to the evolving financial landscape. For instance, one of your colleagues, I believe she's the head of content at Techcombank, she posted this morning about how she moved from Ho Chi Minh City to Hanoi, and she was pleasantly surprised by how the proliferation of QR codes was everywhere in Hanoi compared to Ho Chi Minh City, where cards were much higher adoption. So she was telling me as well, like the digital app of Techcombank, she thinks it's going to be a monster in Hanoi because people love using the QR code there. So anyways, I just wanted to give that little context. We'd love for you to share more about how you approach innovation, given how rapidly changing the landscape is.
So let's talk about that. You said at the beginning, right, you know, cash, we're really competing against cash. And, and that's exactly what our deputy chairman says all the time. Our main competitor is not another bank.
Yeah.
our main competitor is cash. How do we take cash out of the system?
Yeah.
And how do we compete to be better than cash? Now, first of all, I challenge anybody to just go onto Google and look up how many viruses and bacteria you get on the average cash bill. Right? That in itself should scare people. It's pretty nasty what you can catch from cash, but put that to one side.
Sure.
Right? Yeah, cash is traditionally, it's been used for many years in coin form or paper form, and people are comfortable with that. And it's very fungible. It's easy to kind of move around, and it's physical. So a lot of stuff in finance is invisible. And therein lies a challenge for many people. How do you understand something where you can't see it? If you make stuff, you see what you make. And then when you go to buy stuff, you go look at it and say, yeah, I can feel it, I can touch it, I like it, I don't like it. But finance is intangible, and it's intangible assets. You know, cash is kind of something people are very familiar with. When I moved to Shanghai, first thing I did, I went to an ATM and I withdrew cash. Mm-hmm. 4 years later, I left Shanghai and moved to Vietnam. The cash I took out of the ATM machine, I still had in my pocket.
Wow.
Never used it. As soon as I got into the office, I was signed up for WeChat Pay and Alipay, and I was using QR codes the entire time. The street vendors on the street, they all had QR codes, as well as the biggest shops and merchants all having QR codes.
Let's touch upon that, too. How about cards? I mean, that's like the main form of payment for the average, let's say, white-collar worker nowadays. Like, they cash into something more a bit flexible, I guess you could say. And there's credit cards, debit cards. How was your experience in China using cards? Was that adopted at all?
Well, only UnionPay.
Okay.
Visa, right, and MasterCard, those networks are not accepted
present, yeah,
in China. So UnionPay. It was easy to use a UnionPay card in bigger retail merchants, small shops now, right? But what people generally did for just everyday easy spending, it's QR payments. It's very simple. Open up the app, scan, done.
So Techcom Bank's future, it's future in the whole system to pioneer the adoption of the mobile app, let's say, QR code.
Well, when it comes to payments, we've taken a view that we will enable all of our customers to make payments in any form factor that they want to make payment in. It doesn't matter. Yep. We will just provide access to whatever you want. We're not going to say, hey, come to Techcom Bank, you have to use a debit card, or it has to be a Visa debit card, and or you have to use our QR code. No. If you want to have a wallet, we're connected to the wallet. You can move money into your wallet, out of your wallet, and you can make payments through your wallet. That's okay, too. Really, it's your choice. We are trying to create as many new ways to enable customers to make payments in a way that is totally flexible and convenient for them. So, we're also looking at other things. Should we be using palm payments, facial recognition, retinal scans, and fingerprint access? Some of that is easy for customers to do. You know, as again, quote our deputy chairman, he talks about how do we become cashless, cardless, and appless? We can. The technology is available, but at the same time, we've got to see what would be adopted by our customers. Are you comfortable giving your fingerprints to the bank and us storing those fingerprint records and then enabling you to make a payment with a fingerprint?
Yep.
You might be, you might not. That we need to understand, what do our clients feel comfortable with before we would invest in that type of technology. But the premise is very, very simple. Everything that is being developed, wherever it may be developed around the world, we will try to find and bring the best of that to Vietnam and enable it for our clients if our clients are saying, hey, that would be really helpful, that would be really useful.
Very good. We do that.
We really are looking for talent around the world. So if we just think about the last 18 months, we've held talent recruitment roadshows in Singapore, in London, in San Francisco, in Sydney, Australia. We've gone to these markets. We specifically held open roadshows to try and ensure that people really understand what's happening in Vietnam, what's happening in Techcom Bank, and bring the best talent that we can to this market to enable us to be leading when it comes to innovation around the needs of our clients.
How innovative is the Vietnam market for the financial system, payments in particular, compared to all the other places you've been?
Let me give you an example of an innovation of payments in the United States. One is to enable a simple transfer from one customer to another in a mobile app. doesn't sound that innovative. A bigger innovation is that when you receive a check, do people in Vietnam even know what checks are? Because people in Asia haven't used checks for, what, I don't know, 10, 20 years. But anyway, people in the US still make check payments. When you get your check, you can scan the check through your mobile app so the funds get deposited into your current account. That's innovation in the US. That doesn't really feel like innovation. That's like taking really old legacy processes and just digitizing them. That's not digitalization. Okay. What's happening in Vietnam is very different. And that's exciting. Vietnam really now, over the last few years, has started to shift from following others to leading others. And so the innovation that is happening in the payment space and in other aspects of financial services sector is actually pretty advanced. In terms of what the financial system is able to deliver, that's not as advanced as some other markets. But where we are able to deliver financial service solutions here, we're trying to find ways to do it in the most advanced ways possible.
Okay. You mentioned that you guys cover all types of customer needs, and I'm sure you have a variety of different customers themselves as well. We have a term here. We often hear the phrase in Vietnam, especially, money never sleeps. I'd love for you to address how Techcombank and your team in particular on the retail banking side addresses all these customer needs across so many different spectrums. How, where do you start and where do you end and where does it end?
Well, you know, I kind of look at it, split it into two areas. One, payments. Why do people put their money into a bank? They put it into a bank because it's safer than putting it under the mattress. And they want to be able to access it whenever they can. So if we can enable a safe way for customers to store their money and then get access it, access to it as easily as possible whenever they want, however they want, that's one aspect of our retail banking. And that covers the needs of, potentially that can cover the needs of everybody in the market. However, this is a market where wealth is growing and accumulating. What GDP per capita grew last year around 10%. It's still relatively low, about $4,100, but it's growing faster. By 2030, I think they estimate to be something like 7,500. With that growth in wealth, people start to have funds that exceed their daily payment needs. And so how do you help people put that money into something that is able to generate additional returns? And so that starts to be the wealth side of the business.
Let's talk about that. Retail banking, and you've just mentioned a very key term, wealth, which we talked about in terms of, in relation to your experience. But talking about the context of banking and how Vietnamese perceive wealth, how is that perceived in Vietnam, like wealth management, wealth creation? But also, what is considered being wealthy? Like when you guys at Techcombank communicate wealth management, what does that mean for customers in Vietnam? Is it, are they in the affluent sector group or like aspiring affluent? Maybe you can paint that picture.
Well, I think everybody is slightly different. But at a basic level, if you have funds in excess of what your everyday spending needs are, you've started to accumulate a level of wealth. Now that wealth goes from a very, very low level to an extremely high level. To up to today, the wealthiest man in Vietnam is number 32 on Forbes list. I didn't check where the share price was on Friday, so yeah, give or take, somewhere on that list, right? Big extremes. If we look from 2017 to 22, people with wealth at a level of $1 million or more has been growing at about 70%.
Is that the highest in the world or one of the highest?
It's one of the highest. Okay. By contrast, take take Thailand. I think that was growing at about 24% through the same period. In terms of numbers, what does that mean, though? You know, population of 100 million, well, how many people? It's about 70,000 people in Vietnam as of 2022. Thailand was about 95,000 people. And as we look out through the next few years, it's Vietnam's expected to grow at that level of wealth, something close to around 60%, about 112,000 people.
Okay.
And again, Thailand growing slightly less, but absolute numbers still slightly more. Once you go beyond 1 million, take another threshold, 30 million. Here in Vietnam, we're talking about, while the growth has been great, 81% over the same period. But it's only 1,100 people, very small. Slightly higher than Thailand, actually, 940. estimated in China.
Yeah, a bit of a side question too, that wealth creation, is it being mostly from the older generations or the newer generations that are starting work today? Like, where is that wealth creation coming from?
The wealth creation as it is largely from people now who are in their 40s, 50s. You think about Vietnam's status, and it really started from, 1986 or so, where there were some changes, fundamental changes.
Sure. Yep.
And from that, that's enabled people over the last, 30, 40 years, whatever that is, to be able, through their own creativity, their ideas, their business skills, acumen, whatever, to create opportunities to grow wealth.
With that wealth creation, you could say that the products around wealth management have been fairly underdeveloped in the past because the market just hasn't been that large. Now it's you're mentioning 60% growth in a few years. That's massive. There's a lot of...
It is, but still relatively small numbers.
Okay.
So, the challenge is... there's a number of different challenges. Mm-hmm. One, Vietnam is a managed economy. Mm-hmm. It's part of that managed economy, like others at this stage of its development. They are also very careful in terms of how the exchange rate is managed. Mm-hmm. That has implications in terms of the cost of exports. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if the currency becomes too strong, exporting to the world increases the price of exports from Vietnam and could be non-competitive. Mm. Flip side of it is, Vietnam also has to import. So if the exchange rate is in slightly different space, then imports become too expensive, and that also is a problem for the economy. So there are constraints, and money doesn't flow freely outside of Vietnam. So what can you invest in? So the asset classes here, people put money into their business. And that's a key part of where money goes. People put money into real estate and into land. And people have traditionally put money into gold. Those have been three areas of wealth that people with wealth have been able to put money in to grow wealth further.
Are there new wealth management products coming out soon that you see in the next few years that potentially...
Well, there are already. There start to be more investment products. Mm. So, obviously equities through TCBS, our securities entity, customers can invest directly into equities. Mm. TCBS has it's like somewhere between 7 to 10% market share already.
Okay.
And about 540 trillion of equity AUMs. It's pretty sizable. Mm-hmm. So that is an asset class that clearly has been growing. Okay. Fixed income too. Techcombank and TCBS through our value chain with our institutional clients. Mm-hmm. We've created a dominant market share in bonds and fixed income. And that's an alternative to traditional bank manufactured products like time deposits, where you get a fixed interest rate. Well, with a bond, you get a fixed interest rate over a certain tenor. But what you are taking, you're taking a little bit of liquidity risk and you're taking credit issuer risk. And so as a result, you're getting a slightly higher potential return as long as you're comfortable with those risks. And therein lies the problem of wealth management in Vietnam. It's the level of financial education and financial understanding around new opportunities to invest.
That's a great point.
That somewhat inhibits our ability to create some of the solutions that exist in other markets. We have to keep pace with financial capability because customers have to understand the different risks. Mm. You can't assume that a bond is just like a time deposit. It just pays a high level of interest. It only pays a higher level of interest because it has a different risk profile, and you have to understand that. So we need the skills in our own team to be able to explain that to clients so that they fully understand. And clients also need to be receptive to understanding that typically any customer, you ask them, hey, what sort of product would you like? Well, I want one that pays the highest possible or generates the highest possible return, has no liquidity risk, and has no loss of principal risk. Okay, but even if you take out a time deposit, you're taking some level of risk because you're taking risk on the underlying financial institution that issues the time deposit. How do we help customers actually understand risk and return? And other than technically they say U.S. government bonds are the only risk-free financial instrument around the world, questionable with the recent rating of the U.S. government. But outside of that, everything has a relative risk. And so wealth management and the advances in wealth management have to keep pace with the financial education and financial capability of retail customers in the market.
Yeah, given your team's current understanding of that level of education, what are you guys doing in relation to that? And why are you doing that or why not?
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say that Techcombank is already the leading wealth manager in this market. Mm. Between Techcombank and our securities entity, we've got 1,100 trillion. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you say after a trillion.
Yeah,
so 1,100 trillion. There's a lot of zeros in assets under management for our clients. I mean that is significant. Mm. But the asset classes that we really provide for our customers is real estate investing through our developer clients, where we have a close relationship with the top developers in this market. Mm-hmm. It is our own bank manufactured products, simple savings products, regular savings, time deposits, CDs, etc. And then we also provide access to bonds, which are distributed on behalf of our wholesale bank clients through the securities entity to our retail clients. And then equities provided through TCBS. These are the four big asset classes. And then wrapped around all of that, we provide protection solutions. Mm-hmm. So those who have longer-term protection needs, thinking about life assurance, etc., that we provide through our partner Manulife as a full-spectrum set of wealth management solutions here. Now, that said, there are some clients that have needs beyond that, those asset classes.
And let's talk about that, too. What's going to drive a lot of the wealth management success and sustainability of it are these new business owners, these entrepreneurs who are building their wealth and diversifying it in other types of products. So you mentioned like land and gold has historically been the center of it, term deposits. And those will still be great, but of course they have risk profiles, and we see the economic situation today, a lot of uncertainty about the real estate market. I think it's still a great investment, but a lot of people don't. And I mean, what do I know? It's about the education of these future products. So my question for you is, could you provide some examples of how Techcombank's clients have made a lasting impact through differentiated wealth management practices like the ones you've mentioned? I'd love for you to highlight a couple of examples there.
I think, first of all, let's step back a little bit. Mm. Yes, entrepreneurs, most of our clients are entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. If you think about the affluent classes in Vietnam, many of them are affluent, not because they're salaried, but because they've got businesses. Mm. Even salaried individuals these days have side businesses. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the internet is great for helping with that. Potentially, you could say we're the wealth manager of choice for entrepreneurs. I mean, I think we have 70-80% of the affluent segment in Vietnam as our client base, or within our client base.
Yep.
We may have slightly more, but call it that. And as entrepreneurs, they're all generating, if you think about what they're doing, through their businesses, they're creating employment. Through employment, they're creating salaries and wages, which then get consumed back into the economy, which creates more demand, and through that demand creates new opportunities for new businesses and or job growth. Mm-hmm. It's a virtuous cycle of growth, which you see is why Vietnam, and one of the reasons why Vietnam has such a high GDP growth rate.
Let's touch upon the values and principles that Techcombank applies in particular to the wealth management, but just in retail banking as a whole. 70 to 80% of entrepreneurs choose Techcombank if they're in a certain affluent class, as you mentioned. Why is that? What are the values that drive that adoption and business decision?
Well, you could go back when we were the first to launch zero fees. Mm-hmm. Zero fees and 1% cash back on a debit card. Back in those days, banks were charging fees for this and that. And Techcombank, that's just not right.
Okay.
So let's eliminate those fees. Mm. That got us a lot of customers in. Mm. But at the same time, we also were seeing that customers, as wealth is growing, we've got to find an outlet for that wealth. Mm-hmm. And so our real estate offerings really became market leading. And I think as a result, we have driven significant value for many of our customers through the opportunities to invest right at the beginning into market-leading developments. Mm. You said earlier there's been some trouble with the real estate market. There's trouble everywhere with real estate marketing. It is not something that grows consistently over time. We all thought it did. When I was growing up, everybody thought real estate prices would never drop, and then suddenly in London they did drop, and it shocked everybody. The U.S. financial crisis, actually two of them, have been related to property and property price value declines. And we've had a little bit of uncertainty here over the last few months in Vietnam. But if you look beyond the short term, what you actually see is a population that has insufficient high-quality housing. As Vietnam continues to grow, well, that will change. There has to continue to be development of better quality real estate for a growing population and a population mm-hmm. that has growing wealth. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're right to say real estate will continue in value. Mm-hmm. And that is an asset class that we were very early to provide to our customers, and that also then generated interest from more affluent. Combine that with our fixed income capabilities mm-hmm. and then the service model that we've had. The introduction, for example, 10 years ago, the first bank to introduce priority banking. Put it all together, and what is it? It's market-leading offerings delivered in a way that is very seamless and intuitive and provides cost value to an individual consumer in a service model that they like. And ultimately with that, then drives rewards and recognition that resonate positively with our customers. Put it all together, that's been Techcom Bank's secret.
So it's not just access, but access to higher quality products and investment opportunities, which is my next question about building meaningful financial heritage. Yes, you can buy any piece of land and an apartment, but if the build's not good, if the developer is, you know, didn't have their management responsibilities in order, it could lead to a lot of customer disappointments. So let's talk about that access to higher quality products for financial sustainability. Could you touch on a couple of examples? And I ask that out of personal curiosity, but also for, I'm sure a lot of our viewers today are asking about the same kind of question.
We're actually pretty selective about the partners that we decide to work with. And so when we choose partners, whether they're big or small, mm-hmm. we do a lot of due diligence around them. Okay. So when it comes in the real estate space, companies like Vinhomes, Masterise Homes have been key partners for us, and that's helped in the real estate space. Mm. We announced last year our partnership with Massa. Okay. And in that partnership in the WinLife ecosystem, we decided to embed ourselves because we felt Masan and Win Commerce, et cetera, is a very strong FMCG partner with which we could create real value and synergies between Techcom Bank and the Win stores. It's what, 3,500 odd across the country. On the insurance side, we've been very careful. We launched with Chubb recently because we felt not only do they have very strong general insurance products, but they also have some tremendous digital journeys that enable access to very simple insurance products very easily for customers. Mm. But then others, you know, we first, one of the first banks here in Vietnam to sync up with Apple Pay. Just recently launched.
Yep.
It's been hugely successful. Mm. We have a new partnership with Starbucks. So we choose partners very carefully based on not only the capabilities of the partner, but also on the needs of our clients.
How do the partners partner with Techcom Bank? Do they reach out to Darren on LinkedIn? Or
some do. some come to us. We go to others.
Right.
You know, it's nice that Techcom Bank has a terrific brand reputation here.
Yeah.
Actually, brand value is what, 1.4 billion, if I remember correctly, and one of the top valued financial brands in Vietnam.
I want to talk about the partnerships because you mentioned a couple names, and I think they're all very well known. Starbucks, that was unexpected, but I'm not surprised either. I think they're a great brand, and so is Techcom Bank.
I'm amazed how many people like to upsize their coffee.
Yeah. I think they've done it. We actually have a podcast with the CEO of Starbucks Vietnam coming out very soon, so stay tuned for that.
You should have a coffee here.
No, exactly. Maybe she can sponsor the show. But I'd love to get your kind of perspective on what makes a good partner. I think you named it a couple names, and not surprising, I think they all stand out in some way. But what are the values that drive a partnership in your mind and your team's mind?
Actually, to be honest, I think that goes back to my 8 years in Japan. Mm. I had worked for a U.S. financial institution for many years, and the U.S. has a certain business dynamic. Mm. When you go to find a partner, you try to maximize the value you can get out of that partnership. Mm. Whereas in Japan, it's very different. Mm. It's about really making sure that there is not maximum value for you, but there's fair economics for both parties. Mm. And what I've seen over the years that when you work with partners and you work in a way that both partners, both part, both sides in the partnership feel that they are getting fair economics and positive outcomes, that's the best partnership. Mm. If any side in a partnership feels that they're being taken advantage of, it never works. It always leads to failure.
I agree with you. I have a model myself at Vietcetera where any sort of relationship, partnership externally or internally with coworkers and all that, it has to be a win-win. If it's a win-lose, like too much, like one benefits more than the other, then of course it's not sustainable, right? And I think even on my side, let's say we have a partnership, which not quite yet, but we're on this podcast. Your side commercially, whatever, wins a lot, but I don't, or vice versa. I might not even want to do it where, yeah, I benefit a lot, but knowing that the other partner suffers, that's not really good. And you know, what do you do to address that, of course? Maybe not do the partnership in the first place, but, or second, you know, as soon as something like that happens, you have to correct it. And I think having those expectations together as partners is excellent. I think the brands can only do so much. I think that's 90% of the job, but that 10% of understanding about outcomes as well is going to make that work. And great to hear that you guys have thought about that, and at least on the retail banking side have been very precise in those kind of partnerships. So awesome. Great to hear that, Darren. I would love to also talk about some practical advice and strategies. I think, you know, if you're a typical Vietnamese family here in Vietnam, buy land, that's the first thing you do, or buy an apartment or get some gold or whatever it might be. Aside from those advices and strategies, I'd love to hear from you. You've been 35 years in the business and more recently here, just a couple years in Vietnam, but bringing your experience over here, what are some tips you could share to our audience today in terms of wealth management and building that heritage that's built to last?
I think it's a very young population. Mm. Which is too long in cryptocurrency.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was reading somewhere it's like top five market in the world or something. It's a little bit too imbalanced, do you think?
It's a little imbalanced. Okay. In the short term, actually, it's a little speculative. Mm. Right? And if you've got a very high risk profile and you want to be speculative, that's fine. You can put a portion of your wealth to one side and say, hey, this is going to be my play money. Mm-hmm. And be prepared. You can get great returns, but be prepared to also lose it, potentially lose it all. Don't put, you've got your last, I don't know, 500 million dong. Yep. Don't put that last 500 million dong into Bitcoin,
thinking
you're going to double it to a trillion and life is going to be good again. It might not. So
250, even though it's a little too much for you.
Yeah.
Anyways, not financial advice.
Not financial advice.
Yeah, just some.
I'm not a CFA. I'm not a licensed investment advisor. So take what I say with a pinch of salt. However, think about, first of all, are you thinking long term? Are you thinking short term? If it's short term, you can have a very different sort of attitude compared to long term. If it's long term, you've got to be really careful. Don't time the market. Really don't time the market. And don't think, oh, this is going up. So many people see equities. Equity price is going up. Oh, I need to buy. And then equity price is going down. Oh, I need to sell. Well, actually, all you're doing is losing money. You're going to end up buying high and selling low. And that's exactly the opposite of what you should be doing.
So
think about how much money do you want to put at risk? How much you put $100 in, are you prepared to lose zero? Are you prepared to lose $10, $20, $50? How much before you say, oh, actually, that I don't want to do that? Once you understand that, then you can start to think about how you build a more balanced portfolio and how much is weighted into higher risk asset classes versus lower risk asset classes. Think about what your financial needs are, not just your short-term spending needs, but what are the things coming up on the horizon? Are you expecting to have a family? Are you expecting to have one or two children? The cost of looking after those children is clearly going to have an impact on your financial capabilities, and you need to plan for that. If something was to happen, well, how do you ensure that the obligations and the needs of your family can be taken care of in the event that you're not there or not able to work to take care of the family? You've got to put all of this together and then decide how much you put in land, which is could be relatively illiquid right now. People who invested in a lot of real estate last year, prices have come down in some of those developments. It's becoming a lot harder to sell than it traditionally used to be. So there's a little bit of a liquidity squeeze at this point. Bonds last year, second half of last year, there was some dislocation of the bond market. So buyers were not plentiful. And as a result, people wanted to sell because they needed access to liquidity. They were finding the only way to sell is at a relatively large discount. It means they're taking a haircut and they're taking a loss. Right. They could have still held to maturity. They would have continued to get their coupon, would have been fine. But if suddenly you need to sell because you need that liquidity, well, then you're subject to the vagaries of the market and where the market is.
So,
so you've got to think of all these things together.
Great practical tips and, you know,
so
food
for
thought.
I didn't give you a single equity
but
name.
Not financial advice, yeah. Exactly.
TechCombank's doing really well there.
Okay, very good. I'll take a look. I also kind of want to answer this question myself because it actually just, we got a lot of comments on this show and various other shows. We have another one related to personal finance, and they're always asking for our guests like you to kind of talk about that, or even me. And, you know, for those of you listening, for myself at least, I recently adopted, I've known it for a long time, but more serious about it, is how to live a rich life, but not rich in terms of, and wealth is kind of the same thing. It's not about how much money you have. That is, of course, important, but it's not about the number. It's about what kind of life you want to live and then building your financial planning around that. So for instance, when you mention, buying land or buying this, yeah, for like me, I know what my answer is about it, and I won't share it today, but I'll share it for next time. And as a result, I have made a conscious decision where I may not or will save money for that. I'm not going to disclose on this show. But yeah, I think that's a nice frame. I just wanted to share that because you mentioned very similar tones. How do you see your life being? Is it what kind of wealth or what kind of rich life you want to live and build around that? So,
well, actually, we launched here in Ho Chi Minh last year, just a year ago. Inspire, and Inspire is a whole tier. We call them branded tiers: Inspire, Priority, and Private are branded tiers. Inspire there is for a generation generally aged in their mid-20s to late 30s, and it's about experiences, wanting to live their life on their terms. It doesn't mean to say that they don't still have some traditional Vietnamese values, family values and others, but they don't necessarily want to live their life in exactly the same way as their parents did, their grandparents or their great-grandparents. Maybe they've always wanted to play music. That means they don't necessarily want to work in agriculture. Maybe they wanted to travel the world and they want to spend some time getting experiences outside of Vietnam. Maybe there's some other things that they would like to do. Yep. Inspire is about enabling our customers to personalize their financial experiences with us, but ultimately to enable them to pursue their own path. It's called Live Life Richly.
Okay.
And that's about enabling our clients to enjoy the richness of life, the very small moments that bring immense joy. And that's what we're trying to do with Inspire. And that is the inspiration for Why Not.
Very good. Like having that Starbucks coffee every morning. I was not paid for that. I have two last questions for you, Darren. The last, you kind of touched upon it, but I would love to see if you could share perhaps a precise example about some success stories of these tech company clients. Either the ones that have been with for 30 years or even more recently the last two as these new products have launched, for example. Have there been any highlights of outstanding results you've seen in terms of, you know, wealth creation or repositioning of their wealth management and thinking? Could you highlight a couple of examples?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think I can...
Name names.
I can't name names, no. Confidentiality.
Sure.
But, you know, if I think...
As a good banker should.
As I think about how we're focused on delivering for our clients, and I said we've got a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of entrepreneurs running small businesses and so on, small businesses growing into large businesses. And so if we think about how connected we are between our wholesale bank, our business banking teams, and our retail banking teams, we work very closely together to enable the success of all of our clients. And what we can see is very clearly over the 30 years, a significant number of our individual clients starting up small businesses, growing those small businesses, ultimately some of those small businesses becoming very large businesses. We've played a big role in helping that and creating a value chain for us and all of our clients. So, you know, I mentioned real estate. Not only do we enable people to buy real estate to live in, we enable customers to buy real estate to invest. But that supports also some of our developer clients. As we have a great customer base, it helps them move more real estate property. Mm. And it also enables them, as they issue bonds, for us to go back to more affluent clients and say, here's an investment asset that may suit your needs. Mm-hmm. And so it's all interconnected, and that creates value and success stories.
Okay. An ecosystem.
Quite a few.
Not just retail banking, but a lot more. Thank you, Darren, for sharing your insights today. I have one last question for you. It's not about banking. It's actually about other stuff. So on the show, we have experts of all kinds, from banking to real estate to airlines to media, whatever it might be. And the thing is, as a business leader, you'd like to know a little bit more outside of your industry to make yourself a little bit better at what you do, or just out of personal interest. So for example, our last guest mentioned that they'd love to know more about sustainability, specifically about water. How does that, people read about the Mekong Delta and how there's less rain than normal, that kind of stuff. And they just don't know about it out of personal curiosity. Anyways, we've had tons of different type of answers. So I think in your case, you know a lot about banking, but maybe there's something you don't know about that could make your job a lot better. So my question for you, Darren, is what kind of industry or topic would you like to know more about so we can invite guests from our network onto the show so you can learn something?
You know, I've been lucky. I've managed very large institutional businesses mm-hmm. over the years, and as a result, I've had access to some of the largest corporates and companies around the world. Mm. I've been very curious, and curiosity, all of us need to be curious. Mm-hmm. If we really want to explore this world, we can't have a closed mind. And I think, you know, depends on whoever or whatever business that I've been working with. I've been really intrigued to learn much more about them. So right now we talk about sustainability. As a fantastic client of mine once was Indorama, based out of Thailand and into the plastics field. But the amount of work that they're doing in sustainability and in terms of being able to turn their businesses into one where the waste products can be recycled, etc. That's incredible what they're doing. Bamboo was another. Who think coal mining, right? But bamboo, green coal, and other things that they're doing in Indonesia are really quite fascinating. When I was in Tokyo, we obviously used to have a lot of earthquakes, and I was there through the very significant earthquake mm-hmm. of March 11th, 2011. Which
tsunami,
then led to tsunami,
yep.
Fukushima,
right.
And the nuclear reactor meltdown. I became a real expert on nuclear hazard. I became an expert on microsieverts and how much radiation you could take, what things gave you radiation, mm. how to protect against radiation, etc. There's so many interesting things in this world. So I think whatever you want to talk about, people will be interested as long as they're curious.
Okay. Well, very good. If you have any expertise in one of the ones that you mentioned there from Darren, drop your comments in the comment section below. I'm sure our team would love to hear from you. Darren, it's been a pleasure to learn from you about, starting with retail banking, but the whole ecosystem about wealth management and about the future of financial services in Vietnam. I'm sure Techcombank has a long way to go, but it's building those blocks already, and it will grow as Vietnam grows. So thank you for those insights, and let's see where Techcombank takes us.
So, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in for another episode of Vietnam Innovators. Without you, week in and week out, this show would not be possible. So keep tuning in, subscribe, like, and comment, and we'd love to hear from our community. See you guys next time. Bye.
Từ xa xưa, biểu tượng thứ quý đã bắt rễ vào nguồn cội văn hóa Việt, đại diện cho những giá trị được trọng vọng nhất. Trường tồn vững chãi như tùng, cốt cách kiêu hãnh như cúc, mạnh mẽ sinh sôi như trúc, cao sang phú quý như mai. Mang tinh thần của tứ quý, một dịch vụ ngân hàng đã ra đời để trân trọng những giá trị tạo nên các vĩ nhân. Techcombank Private, một gói giải pháp toàn diện trân quý những nhu cầu riêng biệt của quý khách. Liên kết các chuyên môn tài chính để khai mở những cơ hội đầu tư, không chỉ để sinh sôi tài sản, mà còn để những giá trị quý khách coi là quan trọng nhất được nảy lộc vượt nhiều thế hệ. Techcombank Private, giá trị sinh sôi, nảy lộc vượt thời. Hãy đón chờ!
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.